So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about WWDC and E3 and any more acronyms that we can think of. And we're joined by our UK Bureau Chief, Matt Smith. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Dev. Hey, Sher. Pleasure to be back again.
You sound so tired already, Matt. Yeah, it's like you're done with us.
It was WWDC Monday, and now we're already in the throes of E3. And that kind of goes through the weekend until Nintendo on Tuesday. So yeah, it's going to be a long week.
It's going to be a long week and a long weekend. But yeah, we'll talk more about what you can expect from us. As always, if you're enjoying the Engadget podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review in iTunes because that one really matters. And drop us a line at podcast@engadget.com. If you have any questions or comments or whatever, you could join us live Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. That's always a fun thing because you can have some Q&A with us. You can hear the behind-the-scenes action. And you can hear what Matt really thinks of Sherlyn when you come to these things.
Yeah. But, like, you always know with Matt.
That's my catchphrase.
So let's get right into WWDC, or Dub-Dub, as we like to call it, because we get lazy about talking about this thing. You guys, Matt and Sherlyn, you guys talked a lot about this on YouTube already, so you could go check out that live stream for the full event breakdown. But now's a good chance for us to say, hey, let's take a step back and just talk about what really matters. And I feel like there are three main pillars, right? iOS 15, it's macOS Monterey, and watchOS 8 to a lesser degree. iOS 15, I feel like, really stole the show this year at WWDC. What do you guys think? And what are the highlights from it this year?
Okay, so this year for me was my first year really paying more attention to iOS than watchOS, because we no longer have Chris Velasco, that traitor.
You basically killed and destroyed Chris Velasco and absorbed all his powers.
Absorbed his corpse. But
Chris Velasco is moving on to another fine institution, so we'll be seeing his work elsewhere. Don't worry.
And back here sometimes too. Yep. Anyhow, so iOS 15 was what Apple kicked off its keynote with, and the thing I noticed about WWDC this year is that actually a lot of the stuff that was mentioned up front on iOS 15, that section, also kept reappearing throughout, and I think that it's pretty cohesive, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way one feature gets mentioned and you're like, oh, share with you gets mentioned at the start of iOS 15, and then it keeps popping up throughout too. So I mentioned share with you. I think iOS 15, the very first thing that Craig Federighi, announced, one of the biggest changes, or one of the apps that got the most changes this year, I believe, is FaceTime. And just the fact that they're enabling web links now for FaceTime calls and allowing Android and Windows users to join your FaceTime calls.
Only from those web links.
Right, browser-based calls, these are not like apps for those systems. But still, I mean, this was a theme that we saw recurring, and I think Matt and I talked briefly about this on the post-show recap. But it seems like Apple is opening up in a multitude of ways. One is to be more, play nicer with a lot of other platforms. And second is to kind of open up features within its own software to kind of work better, for its apps to work better across iOS.
It seems like a distinctly Apple way of opening up, right? Because it's also very much about locking you in. I think based on all their announcements, I personally was like, oh, within 50 minutes, I guess I'm sticking with iOS mainly as my main mobile OS, because a lot of these updates sound really cool. FaceTime is getting like multi-view windows for participants now. It is getting a lot of like Zoom-like features, which is cool.
A little slow to get them.
But I do FaceTime every day because that's how my daughter sees my parents, most of the time during dinner time. So it's still nice to see. But it is funny because Apple opens up while still keeping like one hand held on to its own platform. They're like, hey, here's WebView. Here, like, you're not going to get messages. You're not going to get like the cool, features from stuff like that.
Like, that's it's funny because that's the dichotomy I got from it all. It was very much Yep, sure. Like, here you go. Here, you can use... You can use FaceTime on other devices in a, you know, a not quite adequate way through, you know, a web app, right, and the rest of it. And that's going to work. But the other major part, well, apart from notifications, I'm sure we'll get to that. But the other major thing was the share with you things. So the idea that a lot of these Apple services and existing apps and, you know, things you're already using on your iPhone will now kind of interconnect with each other. So it'll, you know, there'll be a lot more richer interactivity through messages. You'll be able to kind of watch Apple TV and some other video streaming services connected to someone else who is on an iOS device. So it's like, there's a little bit of like, other people can use this, but there's a lot of, let's make this walled garden's walls even thicker. Is that, does that analogy work?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of what you said, Matt, and also this ties into Devendra's point, right? Like, so one of the things that we got more clarity on after the our post-show recap from Apple was SharePlay and how it would work with these third-party streaming apps. So as a recap, SharePlay is that feature that's kind of like a house party where you can watch a video or a TV show on FaceTime with your friend and have that sync up at the same time so you can both watch it together. So it currently works with things like, obviously, Apple TV, but also HBO Max is one of the big names. TikTok, if you love watching TikToks,
that's actually
with
pretty
your
great. I spend.
I think that's a good idea.
I know Sherlyn is like anti TikTok at this point, but we have dedicated TikTok breaks at this point in my house because it's like one way for me to calm my daughter Sophia down. Is like I have a lot of like the animal streams on TikTok, and it's like a quick hit of like cute content. That's it, and then you're in and you're out.
It's funny because I think carry on, Cher. I can come back.
No, go ahead. I was just going to explain what we learned. And then, yeah. So anyway, what we learned post-show recap, after the post-show recap in a briefing with Apple, is that people were wondering, do both parties need to have subscriptions to some of these services for it to work? And so for third-party apps like HBO Max, for example, Apple is saying it's up to the creator of that app. So it's up to HBO Max to be like, oh, we need both of you to whatever. For Apple TV, though, Apple TV Plus anyway, Apple has said that, yes, both parties need to have a subscription or a trial to access the content together.
Okay, so yeah, Apple is setting the baseline there. Nobody's going to be more open than that. Yeah.
Right. Oh, and on the page where, like, say your friend's like, let's watch this Apple TV show together. I have a subscription, do you? And you don't, right? On your FaceTime call, there will be an so-called like an easy way to sign up. So obviously this is kind of like for you to, it's a way to pull more people in as well.
Yeah. Gotta love it.
So
love
that
it.
That felt interesting.
Apple throws you a life raft, but here, please pay $5, you know, so you can hang out with your friends.
Grappling hook back to the TikTok.
Yeah,
thing.
Yep, yep. We're slowly reeling it in.
So what I think's interesting is it's things like TikTok, which I think work best in these kind of share ways. What's missing is there's no YouTube, and there's probably not going to be any kind of Facebook video stuff as well, right? Which is understandable. It's understandable why we don't have it. But I'm less interested in watching. I think Disney was included is one of the ones mentioned at the start, right?
Hulu,
yeah. And so I don't gonna, you know, I'm not gonna watch a whole season of Loki with someone.
Why not, Matt? Let's watch it together, Matt.
Sherlyn is like, yeah, deleting the email she's forming for the Loki fan club.
Loki share view, yeah. It'd be interesting to see whether they can get YouTube in on it and, you know, other things like that. Require subscriptions. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, they are made better with subscriptions. I've talked about this before. YouTube Premium is fantastic. It is worth that money to just get rid of ads.
Is this a hack or not? So if I stream from YouTube to my Chromecast or to my home hubs, I get maybe a fraction of the ads. I mean, 1 in 10.
Oh.
Does anyone else experience that? Or is that a UK thing?
I still get ads. Yeah.
But maybe less. You might be right.
Watch it elsewhere. I can watch like whole seasons of YouTube stuff and not
see
an ad.
It could be where you are too.
Yeah.
It could be like a UK
thing.
Versus,
so Brits, try it, because I'm seriously talking about next to no ads. Yeah. Compared to like a phone viewing experience, like next to nothing. What else do you get when you subscribe to YouTube?
You did get Google Music access, which is now YouTube Music. But really, the reason I do it is
you get
to download YouTube videos, which is also super useful.
I think you always got that.
It depends. Picture in picture within the app, but you don't get picture in picture on iOS, which is one of my favorite features that's on iOS. When you have a full screen video.
You did with a premium. No?
I wish, because I try it all the time. But anyway, YouTube Premium is good. But also, Google has always been really slow about bringing YouTube stuff over to the Apple platform. Like, the Apple TV 4K YouTube app wasn't 4K until, like, last year, I think, which is ridiculous. So, like, Google has this thing, but I'm sure they're gonna come up with something there.
Yeah, the way Apple put it really quickly about these third parties that are not on SharePlay just yet, it's that they're working with them and they just need to make their apps compatible. That's it. It's not really like, it doesn't sound like a partnership thing, because Google and Apple have been partnering up a lot lately on things like Google and Apple TV. So we'll see.
And there's like a lot of great other, just like little, I don't know what you call it, like ease of use changes, right? Like they, what is it? Like the share with you feature, which collects your links and puts them in one spot, like the links people send you, like this, all the annoying stuff you get all day from your friends that you never pay attention to. It goes in one spot in the Apple News app. So now notifications are going to be smarter. Like you'll actually, I think Apple realized, oh my God, we created a monster here. A monster of a platform that is just dominating people's lives with pings and updates and things that they don't really need. So what if you could treat notifications, you know, just like bundle them all together, deliver them at specific points of the day for things that aren't like immediately important? I think that's super smart, because I would love to get my notifications closer to lunch if they are not like life or death things, right?
Yep. I this is possibly one of my favorite things because I suffer from notification fatigue on Android at this point. And it's just a lot of apps just access you, are allowed to send you notifications for no reason, even after you block them, right?
Yeah.
So this thing, according to Apple, will allow you to set a schedule as to when to get these less important app notifications. Mm-hmm. So it's judging that on its own by your frequency of use of the app, or you know how important it might be. So a messaging app might come through more often than, say, a magazine app or a something like a Headspace, or, you know, Tinder or whatever dating app is you use doesn't have to come through all the time, just at night when you're ready to look at them or something. So notification summary is the name of this feature. And I personally think I'm very hyped for it. I really would love
this
on Android.
Yeah, I think notifications and the privacy stuff, those are the two major good things. And they're kind of, like they've said, like they created a monster. And these are the two things which I kind of dislike about using my phones plural. Like these are the two things I want help with reducing. It's an addictive thing, it's a thing I don't want to do, it's a thing I want to improve, it's a gross part of my job. It's these are the kind you know, these are issues I want to see tackled, and this is Apple kind of tackling them. I'm absolutely kind of waiting to see exactly how good the algorithms and you know the AI is going to be as to kind of truly deciding what I want to see, what I don't want to see. But I think iOS 14 gave us a good hint that some of that kind of behavioral algorithm stuff is quite on point. When I was testing iOS 14 last year, like it all seemed like it knew what it was doing after a few weeks. So
I've really dug that stuff in iOS 14. But just want to say, like, I think what's happening here is we've spent the last decade, right? The tech industry has spent the last decade trying to get us to use their stuff, and trying to make everything addictive, and trying to make, you know, make us, make our lives dependent on these services and these apps and everything. I think Apple is among the rare companies that's just like saying, hey, what if we give people a breather? You know, what if we give them features and ways to kind of slow down this meth? I don't think Google is done much with that. Microsoft, maybe. Nintendo always has this weird thing where they're like, please take a break. You know, with starting with the Wii, you know, please stop playing
Google's
for a while. Yeah.
Google's whole thing is this whole digital well-being thing, right? And digital well-being can be as obtrusive as you want it to be and as, you know, out of the way as you want it to be. So it really is down to the user at that point to kind of decide. It's like I always set my timeout thing, right? I set my timers for my apps and then I'm just like, Well, I guess I can spend 7 hours on Instagram now and I don't care, you know, like it doesn't matter. Anyway, the other thing that Apple appears to be doing with iOS 15 that I was interested by were these focus modes. I'm not sure if these are related to that privacy thing you were talking about, Matt, but focus modes are basically these new, in addition to do not disturb, some new profiles as to how limited your notifications are and what types of apps can get through to your phone's screen or whatever. You're allowed to set up things like a work profile, a personal profile, and a sleep profile for your focus modes. So say from 9 to 5, you turn on the work profile of your focus mode. So apps like Slack or Gmail or email, whatever it is you set, can send notifications throughout the day. But personal things like WhatsApp or, again, Tinder or whatever it is you shouldn't be looking at during work, can be muted for a little bit. And then not only that, your home screen also can change based on what profile you've activated. So like you have to customize these. You can just set custom screens, mm-hmm. and you can, you know, put up your calendar as a widget, and then, you know, things you want to easily access while you're on your phone during, you know, work hours can be there with for easy access. And then you can still access the rest of your phone's apps by going to the app drawer or going to the Today page. My thought on this is that, like, when I was looking at, or I was thinking about the thought process mm-hmm. that goes into creating a feature like this, it seems clear to me that, like, Apple people, like, really were using iOS and were like, we need a different way to engage with our phone. Like, it seems uh-huh. driven from a need themselves.
Good.
And yeah. it's, which is great, right? This is the way features should come, like, good features happen. And I, while I don't like the idea of one machine for both work and personal life, like, I love, but I, that's the whole reason I have two devices, right? Because I wanted to turn off the work phone once I'm done with the work day. Mm-hmm. This does help people who only have one, you know, yeah. mobile device or one.
I only use one mobile
turn
device.
Off work.
Yeah, I also only use one work device because I don't want to juggle either.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I deleted Slack from my personal phone and I deleted my work.
This explains a lot, actually.
Access from things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. That's why people can't find me off work hours anymore.
Or even on work hours half the time.
This is true.
That's what I'm saying. Surely just disappears all of a sudden. But yeah.
That was my thing about focus mode. I feel like A, it shows how Apple seems to be, or people at Apple seem to be thinking about features, and B, like, you know, I think grander scheme there, I like this feature a lot. But mm-hmm. I don't know if it ties into that privacy thing you were talking about, Matt, because I was intrigued when you said privacy.
Mm. So the privacy thing was another one, like you said, Cher, one of these themes that kind of came in at iOS 15 and then just kind of bounced along across the whole presentation. I'm trying to think of what best represented it. I think there was a lot with Safari. And emails.
Yeah.
The mails.
I mean, there's the private relay feature, which is going to be a part of the iCloud Plus subscription.
Which is just your iCloud subscription with a new name and some few features. So the price isn't going to change.
New name.
Yeah.
But private relay sounds cool because it's like, I think it's technically a double hop VPN. So it's like.
All the names sound really cool, even though it's very, very boring. Names.
So Apple and nobody else can see your web traffic, basically.
Yeah.
And it's more private than a normal VPN service, which could technically keep records of where you're going. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And then on the Mails app, the idea is it'll kind of obfuscate pixel tracking. So any kind of data of newsletters or like retail stores that have your email address when they send you an email about their sale. You know, there's a lot of metrics that an email can kind of reveal to you when you open it. It can tell you when you opened it, if you read it, if you just auto-binned it. Where are you when you clicked on it? Where exactly did you click on it? And this is funny because I run the Engadget daily email, so I know this
You're
kind
like,
of stuff
You need
already.
That data.
I am the, you know, I am the evil boss of, you know, pixel tracking at Engadget, even though I don't, you know... to my knowledge, we don't really use any pixel tracking, but we do use metrics to figure out, you know, where people are reading the newsletter. So it's a funny, weird, double-edged sword for me in that I have a vested interest in a way, but I'm also totally, I want everyone to kind of have the freedom and the privacy that they want. And this is just another dial for you to control on that. And I'm more than happy for that to be a thing. But to have that included in a Mails app, I find that's quite interesting, just at the very base level. With the iCloud Plus subscription as well on an email front, you'll also have unlimited kind of auto-generated, you know, at iCloud, I think, email addresses. So you can just kind of register your interest for Yeezy at Gap for as long as that interest lasts and then kill the email address. And they
Did
can
you
never...
just say Yeezy at Gap?
Have you not heard about this?
Sure.
I wonder if I can find a link.
Oh, the Yeezys has a line.
Yeah, anyway. It's a giant blue, it's a really god-awful, ugly blue puffer jacket.
Oh,
that's
boy.
That makes
deconstructed.
Sense.
But that's the first item of many. There's probably going to be some good items. But anyway, I digress.
Okay.
Lots of cool features. Yes. I'm trying to think of the other privacy stuff that I found. Really
let me run down some of the other features we'll find in iOS, and you can bring those up later. But there's live text, which
some
sounds,
of these are finally, by the way.
Some of these are
big
finally
for these.
Live text is basically Apple's Google Lens alternative, which can translate things in real time, and I think also like capture. It can also search based on images too or something, but it's mainly the translation. I think that's going to be really hot.
It's by the way, Google Lens just already does most of
what live text does.
The other thing that sounded like finally is there are some features that Apple Maps also seem to learn from Google Maps,
sure.
Which is the AR directions feature we talked about. But there is one update or improvement to Apple Maps that Google doesn't have yet, which is the detailed level of drawings that they've gone on their map. These are not photorealistic actual photos, right? These are just like renderings based on, according to Apple, they've driven down these cities and like actually made note of where lane markings are, of where, you know,
and highway
stops,
overpasses and things like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of work. So that's why it's limited rollout right now, right? Some cities only, in fact, I think it's only in San Francisco.
Yeah,
so
I'm
far.
Sure but it's mainly San Francisco.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The art looks really nice, I gotta say, because like even if you're say looking at the map at night, there's these things that are called like moonlit glow or whatever for landmarks.
It matches the lighting for the time of day, which is just kind of cool.
Yeah.
You're just like flexing your 3D
so
processing
gorgeous.
For no reason, really, but they're kind of doing
it
makes
it
everything
looks nice.
Look like SimCity a bit.
I was
going to
say,
it
looks like an Apple Arcade game that we haven't quite got yet, doesn't it?
Oh, I would love if they like hid bonus features in this where you can like randomly play a game, because Google Maps does that sort of stuff from time to time. You have random Easter eggs in the Maps app. But no, this is, I think, a nice update to Apple Maps, even if it's not exactly the same as Google Maps, which, by the way, you can also now favorite certain transit routes in Apple Maps, which you could also already do in Google Maps. And then one more finally feature on iOS 15, weather app updates. Oh, redesign. You finally get the dark sky look. You get
Just download dark sky.
So
it looks
long.
Better. Question. One thing related to maps, by the way, Chris Angelo Perez in our chat says that Apple Maps is horrible in the Philippines. Is it better in Southeast Asia, Sherlyn, based on your experience?
I don't use Apple Maps. So
have
I
you? Oh, yeah. You haven't even opened it. Over there, huh?
Yeah, I don't really. Yeah, every time I'm in, even if I'm on an iPhone, I use Google Maps. I don't think Chris asked whether it's better in South Asia. Chris just said Apple Maps doesn't cut it here in the Philippines, but yeah, like.
Well, no, the question was specifically, is it better? What we know is based on this new, new Apple Maps stuff. It's what? The US, UK, Canada, and Ireland. So, you know.
Oh, and according to Jonathan Anderson,
Spain and Portugal,
in our chat.
Yeah.
Apple Maps in Hawaii was amazing.
I'm
which
sure.
is great.
They don't have that many roads there, though, right? So it's not going to take much to kind of nail the road layout of Oahu.
There was a whole team of Apple engineers that was just like, guys, we really need detailed maps of Hawaii.
Yeah.
We just need to go there to spend months in Hawaii to drive over every road.
Let's expense a chopper.
We need to make more sketches of these beautiful volcanoes right now.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to see the volcanoes.
One other thing worth mentioning, though, and this is why I think like iOS 15 just sounds so cool. I just really want to get my hands on it soon. But they announced some Apple Wallet upgrades. So more types of like house keys, potentially, like digital keys for houses, more things for hotels and cars. We'll probably see more of that. But it's going to get support for licenses and official government
driver's
IDs. Which I think that's kind of cool. There are certainly dangers about having everything on one device. And I wouldn't like give up on taking my wallet with me everywhere. But certainly if my wallet gets stolen or something, where I lose my keys, I would love having a mobile backup. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's clarify this. The Apple also said this is your driver's license or your ID information is encrypted and stored on the secure element on your phone.
Yep.
So
just
it's not
like
as
your credit
if,
card
like,
stuff.
It's,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. So it's not like someone can like, therefore, easily hack. I'm sure people can hack and get a copy of your driver's license.
For sure.
if they really, really, really tried.
I'm not. I'm less worried about hacking on my phone, which has secure encryption, rather than the big wallet that is hanging out in your back pocket and anybody can just like grab it.
Big wallet full of cash because he's so rich.
And cards.
And cards.
It's mainly all cards. I'm rich in convenience store cards. I have a Walgreens card. I have a Stop and Shop card.
I was about to say, of all the people on the Engadget team, you're probably the person I expect to still have a Blockbuster card somewhere in there.
I do have a Criterion Channel card, which they gave to like some of the subscribers.
Are we allowed to swear on this? We're probably not, are we?
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Oh, that's the wankiest thing I've heard all day.
It does nothing. It's just a metal slab that says Criterion Channel founding member. It's great. Love it. Okay.
I will say that with the way digital wallets have evolved over the last few years, I have found, especially during the pandemic, that I don't even take my I don't even have a wallet anymore.
Exactly.
I just take my phone out and I'm good. The only thing that I've had to bring has been an ID, and that's immigrant life for you, because
immigrant
I'm just
life,
scared.
Baby.
Yeah, at any time that I'll be stopped and ask for my ID, and then they'll drag me kicking and screaming
to the airport
if I don't. If I don't have a car, they'll drag me.
I mean,
I won't even get a chance to go
America
back to my
apartment. Is not beyond doing things like that for certain ethnic minorities, so it's not great. Yeah.
A question from the UK side is like, because of especially I think due to COVID-19, like in the UK, the amount you're able to pay for with contactless has gone up several times over. Is that true in the US as well?
Slowly. Yeah. I have noticed like things like,
what, you mean like a limit?
Yeah.
Things to pay for too, right?
No. So like,
I think Matt was asking about
limits,
right?
Yeah. So it used to be, I think, £30, and now it's, I think, 60. It might be.
We've never had that. Yeah. What like weird dystopian world are you living in?
Well, if someone kind of, because you could just, I guess it's like a security measure more than anything. But
that's
so what
weird.
With contactless, you can pay like $150 dinner bill. You could pay with contactless.
Yeah, you can pay pretty much any. Yeah,
that's
phone.
Interesting.
You know me and my shopping sprees, Matt. Come
we know,
on.
Sherlyn. That is interesting because it's like, I guess that sort of exists on credit cards, like above like $500 or something, but it is so much easier for somebody to yank a credit card and go on a swiping spree, you know? Weird that you
it must
limit
be a banking rule. Yeah, intriguing. But anyway, it's got a lot more looser and easier to use. So that's good.
Yeah.
Let's move on to some quick other things about Apple. macOS Monterey, they announced, I wrote up that news. Doesn't seem like a huge upgrade. It seems like a very small upgrade, actually, compared to Big Sur last year. But they did announce this thing called Universal Control.
I have a terrible...
Cool.
Can I do a terrible joke? Yeah. It doesn't Monterey to much. Yes. Oh, where's that Criterion card now, Dev?
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, Universal Control. Universal Control. The idea is that you could use a single keyboard and mouse to control multiple Mac and iOS devices. So that's kind of cool if you've got an iPad or something nearby. Yeah.
I have another bad joke.
Do it. I'm just trying to get through the news
this,
here.
This
you
Mac
guys
OS
keep distracting
was,
me. Like
this,
potholes on the roof.
This Mac OS update is more, is so bad. It's more like a Mac OS update.
Nothing.
It doesn't make sense. I know.
Make anything. Just
no,
being
Matt,
mean.
Matt
Please
OS.
No improv
Matt
for
OS.
This team. Yeah, let's not do that.
We're not the improv people. Sorry, Devendra, go on.
Anyway, Universal Control seems cool for the Mac nerds out there. And for people who have desktops, like a Mac desktop and a laptop, or also an iPad sitting around, there in like 2005, there were third-party like little applications that allowed me to do this across a PC and a Mac.
Yeah.
And when I used to like have a big work desk in my IT job, I just had all these systems set up, like three or four computers, and just like seamlessly like move across. It was hell to set up, but it was cool when it worked. So it's really cool to see like this idea coming back now, because it's nice. And a lot of people have iPads and MacBooks, you know.
It's very much a high-end user tool, though. Like the idea of having, you know, a brand new Mac next, a brand new iMac next to a brand new MacBook Pro next to a brand new iPad Pro.
Oh, definitely.
And seamlessly switching between the three of them is such a kind of specifically specific use case for very well-to-do people, or people, conversely, for people that are always using their Macs in their jobs for presentations and graphical things and such. But yeah, I think that's quite a small percentage. It is the coolest feature, though.
It's really cool. But the idea is like, anybody using macOS, if you're using a Mac desktop now, you probably have an iPad. You know, I think that's like the bet they're making here. So it's like, it's also like, hey, we can just, you set it up on the side, you put on Twitter or whatever on it, and like have that be your social feed that's refreshing, you know, as you're doing other work. I think that's cool. Let's move on quickly to WatchOS 8. Anything good here, Sherlyn?
So
wasn't really big.
Yeah, a lot of them, again, like macOS, were a little bit small. I think some of the changes were walking, steadiness. It'll do a detection of your gait and kind of tell you if you're more likely to fall. This works in tandem with fall detection. There's a new mindfulness app that brings in the already existing breathe tool and adds a new reflect prompt.
Really?
Where it's basically trying to, quite silly. It's just you. It's like when you start a reflect session, you sit down and it'll ask you. It's sort of an intro to meditation. So it starts asking you, "What's one thing you're grateful for, and why are you grateful for it?" And I'm just like, "I am grateful that I can fart because it expels air from my body." Mm. Oh yeah, I love farting.
That's definitely real. The things you need to be mindful of in your life. The things that are important
of reducing around, you know, polite
reducing
company.
Bloat. Oh, yeah. This is a weird feature too, because it's almost like, is your watch just telling you, hey, reflect on your life? You know, what really matters to you? Does your life have any meaning? Says the Apple Watch. Like, what are you doing
this
with
your life? This is what me and Cher shared the same feeling on this when we were talking about it on the live stream, in that when our Apple Watch tells us to breathe or you should be standing up right now, we're just like,
oh yeah,
go to hell. Like, just, you know, getting raging at our own wrists because.
Yep.
You don't tell
don't
me, what,
tell
to
me
do.
What to do.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm not sure if this will help.
Oh, yeah. Man. I think I know your personalities too well.
I will say, so two more really quick things that Apple introduced on WatchOS 8 is this portrait watch face feature where it just uses a little bit of AI to make a face stand out against the background of your wallpaper. Looks really nice.
Looks cute.
Thing is, you can't use complications on this watch face, by the way, so just be aware of that. Respiratory rate tracking and sleep tracking now, which is a nice addition, but I'm waiting for Apple to add cardio tracking, as in like make use of your cardio info that it's already doing. It's already doing heart tracking in your sleep. Use that to detect your sleep zones, like REM sleep, deep sleep, light sleep, right? But the one last thing I wanted to shout out about WatchOS 8 that was actually announced in May around Global Accessibility Awareness Day is Assistive Touch. I think Assistive Touch is for one-handed use of the Apple Watch. And basically, it's using the sensors on the watch to detect things like your tendons and your things on your wrist. And when you clench your wrist or you move your fingers in a certain way, the nerves and the muscles of your, you know, your wrists under your skin obviously move in different ways. And Apple's figured out some way to use that and or understand that and know when you're clenching and you're pointing. So you can do things like double clench to bring up a menu move your finger to swipe through options on that menu and then clench once to confirm. So if you have physical motor capabilities, if you don't have, or if you're just struggling with like several bags of groceries, right? And you just don't have the ability to use your other hand to touch the Apple Watch screen, this is a really nice feature. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it in some other third party, I think at CES we saw, I forget the name offhand, but there was a band for the Apple Watch that would enable features like this.
Yeah.
But now it's built into WatchOS 8. And that's really nice. And I love that Apple continues to add features like that. I thought, when I was watching the video, I was like, wait, this looks so cool.
I hope it works well. So, yeah, because they haven't added new hardware. Yeah. This is all based on like algorithmically what they can tell from their current sensors.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes it all the better. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. If it's built into the base device, then you can't.
We'll have to see how effective it is too, because like I know when I'm running with the Apple Watch, I have to be very deliberate about moving my arm so that like it knows I'm running. Because if I'm on the treadmill and I'm grabbing onto the heart rate sensors on the bar, it won't register me as running. So my mile count is so much
better.
And surely, your Apple Watch is monitoring your heart rate. So why are you doubling down?
But I like seeing it on the treadmill screen. So the treadmill screen needs both hands.
But
anyway,
you only do that occasionally. What's going on over there?
It's mostly because I want to keep looking at my heart rate. It's going up by 1 BPM.
Am I alive?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's wrap up Apple here. But one thing we didn't get is any bit of hardware news. And I know a lot of people were kind of waiting for that, for maybe new MacBook Pros, or maybe hearing something about the iMac Pro, maybe that new M1X processor that's being rumored, because it seems like this would be a good time to alert developers that faster hardware is coming. Do you guys feel disappointed?
No, I didn't think there was going to be new hardware at all.
It's WWDC. It's not really the place for it. I get it, just because, wasn't it last year we got silicon? So
it was a big deal last year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that was always just the kind of reveal, wasn't it? I think it was just the reveal of the existence of silicon last year.
Yeah, it was just saying that we're moving. It was announcing the transition. It was announcing a transition over 2 years to Mac Apple Silicon. And it wasn't really hardware that was available to consumers. Our DubDub has never been about hardware like that, but I guess because there were a lot of rumors swirling right around that time, people sort of got hyped for it and were disappointed ultimately.
So. I think whenever there's an Apple event, you want to kind of be using or be involved with the kind of innovations and the new stuff you're seeing, which you do get eventually in, you know, the next generation of iOS. And there's always like developer previews and the beta to kind of test this stuff out earlier than when it eventually makes it to everyone. But yeah, I get the sentiment, but WWDC is just never going to be the place to see your,
wait,
you know,
your
3 months phone.
People wait for September and not even phones, but like wait till the fall. That's when we're going to see certainly new phones as always, but new
hardware.
Computers, that is when things start arriving, you know. So sit tight, folks, we will get to it. Thanks, Matt and Sherlyn. Let's move on to the next big news event for this week, and certainly one of the biggest ones of the year is E3. That's kicking off in the middle of this week. Matt, Jessica Condit, and I'll be doing some stuff too. We're all going to be covering it. The whole team's going to be covering E3. Matt, what are you expecting this year? Because this is a virtual E3. Last year was kind of a disaster in terms of like what was it going on with this event. So what do we expect now?
What can we expect? I mean, I think it might be quite an exciting year for new games. I get a bit kind of frazzled by so many games being either remastered or sequels of existing properties. So I would love to see some new IPs, some new exclusives. Now we have two new current gen consoles, one from Xbox, one from PlayStation. I think now's the time for them to be kind of stepping out and proving why you need to own one rather than the other. I'm really excited for console gaming, let alone Nintendo, because Nintendo, you know, they play by their own rule book. There's a lot of rumors that we might actually finally see a next-gen Switch console, which I think we're due. To be honest, there's not much I know kind of off the books and off the record. But I'm actually more excited for this one than I have been for a few years.
I mean, it's different. It is fully virtual. They're gonna be, you know, streaming the press. The press shows, as usual, will be doing some live streams on Saturday, Sunday, and
tonight,
into next week, too. Tonight.
Today, this afternoon for you guys.
Today at 1:40 p.m. Eastern.
I'll be back.
You're going to be.
It's Summer Gaming Fest, yeah. So I'll be streaming that one with Jessica Condit, and I'm going to have to take a really big
Is that still
this.
A part of E3? Isn't that a completely separate thing? How's that working out?
I think it's separate. Didn't they have their big old divorce 2 years ago?
They hate each other.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, Jeff Keighley can't hear anything about that over the sounds of, you know, all that money dropping from the ceiling. That could be the place my coworker Aaron Soporis suggests that might be where we hear about the next gen Switch. And, you know,
it could be.
He's often
like
quite
smart. If Nintendo
smart.
Wants to, like, just
Sometimes.
Break. Yeah. If Nintendo wants to break the internet and steal all the spotlight from people, it would be a good time to do that.
And then and then whatever they do at their, because Nintendo's, like, live event is until Tuesday. So they have all that time to just get everyone completely and utterly amped.
That's actually true, because then they can start showing off, like, trailers and stuff. Yeah. Rule the whole weekend.
We're so excited.
Rule the whole E3 weekend. Yeah. That's interesting. We are seeing, like, some bits of things coming out. Microsoft did this weird thing this morning where they just did a pre-recorded meeting with Phil Spencer and a bunch of folks where they confirmed, and you can find this on Gadget, they confirmed that they're making Xbox game streaming sticks that you'll be able to plug into monitors and TVs to get some of that xCloud functionality. So that's like a thing that's coming eventually. They're not showing renders or anything right now. They confirmed they're working with TV manufacturers to get Game Pass on smart TVs too, which is also going to include like cloud streaming and things like that. So basically the things we've been thinking about and talking about for a while, the potential of xCloud to kind of put this console on everything, which is good news for you, Sherlyn, I think could be a big deal. Like,
yeah,
let's
this
look
is
at Sherlyn
like
as an example. Yeah.
Yeah, this is Xbox Chromecast. This could be really smart and really compelling.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because right now, I know a lot of people are waiting. Like, first of all, you can't even find the next gen console to buy. But also, the investment of $300 to $500 is a lot if you don't know if you're actually going to be playing these games. Whereas a cheap, like maybe $50ish, maybe a little more. Like, if it was $100 with the controller, because you have to sell this thing with the controller. Maybe $100 with a controller, $50 without a controller. That's a good deal. That's an easy way to jump in, play these games anywhere, take it with you, assuming you have good internet connection. Game Pass alone has a large library of games. I'm really down with this. And they're also confirming that all Game Pass subscribers in the next few weeks will have access to browser-based cloud gaming. So that includes Chrome, Edge, and Safari. This is also a way everybody on iOS will be able to get access to. So you could do this, Sherlyn. So basically, xCloud everywhere, baby. Mm. You guys excited?
Quickly, because I'm like already like now I'm like, oh, maybe now I'll buy now this thing. What games are on here that I should think about?
Game Pass has a ton of games. A very, very, yes. very. So Google that. I'm sure you will find something. But okay. It does require the Game Pass Ultimate subscription, which is $15 a month. Okay. So I think that is the big fine. Jump here. Yeah.
But there's other gaming news, right? Like, it's not just E3. It's not just Xbox's streaming stick.
It's also big games like Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
Isn't there a game? Isn't there going to be a game?
There is a game. We do talk about these things. I've been playing Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, the latest game in the series. Oh. I've clocked in, I think, about like 15 hours into this thing so far. I love it. The reviews are out right now, and I'm working on a piece. I'm also going to be talking with some folks from Insomniac, so I'm kind of waiting on that bit. But hey, the cliche when we talk about games, and certainly like very graphically intensive games, you know, impressive games, does it feel like you're playing a Pixar movie? And I do feel like finally we're kind of there, because the sheer quality of the graphics here on the PlayStation 5 looks incredible with this game.
The attention on the animation, and
so much
like you like on our YouTube live stream here, we're kind of watching a bit of it, and it's just watching the enemies bounce around, and like the way that the kind of particle physics of it all, and like how the scraps of metal behave. It looks I've only played a few hours, so I'm not kind of in as deep as Dev, but it's such a pretty looking game, let alone the kind of technical expertise it takes for them to kind of, you know, open up rifts between two worlds. So you have two concurrent worlds in a video game that you can switch between. I don't know. We've seen that done before on some other games, but not as kind of polished and kind of seamless.
The main thing is like there's practically no load time from this game. From the minute I hit go on the PlayStation 5, I think in under 10 seconds, I'm in there, like loaded up, the game's there, the full world and everything. So I think that's impressive. The attention to detail for the facial animation is what really gets me too, because this is normally something that you have to wait for a pre-rendered Pixar movie, you know, to get characters with a lot of animation and personality. Now we could just do it in real time, and it looks incredible. I reviewed the Studio Ghibli, was it their CG movie? Is it Aya and the Witch?
The Witch. The Itch.
Which is horrible. I hate it. I hate the way that movie looks.
I do remember.
Because the characters, it's a, I called it a, what was it? Like, I said it was like a disaster, basically. But in that movie, people's faces don't move. And the thing about a Ghibli movie is like they're very expressive characters. Usually you could tell a lot from the animation. Here in this game, you can certainly do that. So just want to shout out, if you are lucky enough to have a PlayStation 5, it's definitely a must-have game. The only thing is I kind of wish they had modernized the gameplay a bit, because it's still like, you know, you're running around using lots of fun weapons and things and, you know, beating up the enemies.
I mean,
they haven't really,
like that.
Yeah.
I kind of like the comfort of it. It's also nice to have a flagship game like this that's not Nintendo, that's family friendly, but also, you know, appealing enough to miserable grown up adults like ourselves. That's what I quite like about it. It's very, it's a kid's game with just so much effort put into it that you know, it's hard to refuse, at least so far.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, and there, I won't spoil too much, but there are things you get to like move around more quickly that I think really opens up this world. There are maps that are really large because this isn't an open world game, but there are maps where you will need help to get across really easily. So the game like keeps adding new gameplay elements I really like. And yeah, it just looks good. So yeah, Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart. It's pretty, pretty good. Matt, have you been... Yeah.
Just to kind of connect this back to E3, the funny thing is, of course, like Sony's, you know, releasing this game this week during E3, and they don't have an official E3 presence. Yeah. So this is them just kind of, you know, owning the preamble to E3 with this major game that was teased at the announcement of PlayStation 5 and now has arrived just in time to kind of ruin everyone's
day. Absolutely. They did this on purpose, for real.
Almost definitely. And talking about things ruining people's day. Yeah, so I've also been playing Final Fantasy Intergrade, Final Fantasy VII Intergrade, which comes with the DLC called Intermission, because it's just really confusingly named, because Square Enix, gonna Square Enix. So unfortunately, just due to a quirk of getting the review code, we didn't get the DLC, the new chapter, with a character called Yuffie. I think the American one's better here. Yuffie.
Yeah.
We didn't get that until when the game kind of appeared, Wednesday afternoon. So I've just been playing a few hours of that, and it's a lot of fun. Yuffie is like a chippy, chirpy girl ninja who doesn't take no shit, and she just comes arrives.
She has costumes, yeah.
Yeah, and she's dressed up in this weird costume, which is like a Moogle, which is like a kind of cute, cuddly bear with a big red pom-pom on their head. And she is just like, she just smack talks everyone. Like, there's a whole kind of subgroup of like secondary characters in Final Fantasy VII, Avalanche, and they're kind of these, you know, they're the people trying to take down the evil corporation. And Yuffie comes across one of them looking depressed, worried about the rest of her team and if they're being okay. And then Yuffie is like, cheer up, let's play this mini game. And then she beats her at the mini game and says, ah, you suck, you all suck, and then just walks away, pretty much. She just goes around, she just doesn't care. She hates people in this city called Midgar, which is where all the characters are based, and she just doesn't care. She's like, I'm just going to crush you all. And it's just really funny because she's just like a young teen ninja walking around dressed like a teddy bear, and it's so enjoyable so far.
How does this... Does this work off the save from the last, from like the PS4 version of Final Fantasy VII Remake? Like, how does it work?
It's like a Rift Apart. It exists at completely different points in time. The kind of chronology of both games overlaps. And Square Enix says there's two chapters, I think. I don't want to give any spoilers, and I haven't even got that far into it. So yeah, you're looking about two chapters of Final Fantasy VII Remake in length and content. And it is quite dense, so I've kind of just really heavily patrolled the first area, and I know there's a summon I need to beat, that I know there's monsters that I'm way too weak to defeat just yet. You also come across a lot of the kind of characters that were not barely, but characters that will probably be reintroduced in further Final Fantasy VII Remake games, which is cool. You just see them again, they say their wacky lines, and I don't know, it really helps kind of cement this modern universe. Not to mention, we're getting PlayStation 5 power with the Intergrade version. So higher resolution, I think ray tracing is there, depending on your option.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit in there.
There's a performance mode with 60 FPS, which really, like, I think
everything
my favorite
needs
thing
to be 60 FPS, yeah.
Yeah, my favorite thing is just how well Final Fantasy VII Remake just reimagined these characters and made them so fluid. And, you know, how they move is just, it just makes me weep tears of graphical joy. I don't think that's the thing, but I've said it now. So I'm really enjoying it so far. Tears of graphical joy.
Tears of GPUs. I should probably finish FF7 Remake at some point. I think I was towards the end and there was one big boss who just really pissed me off. I was like, I spent half an hour. It was like a big tank, I think, like after you fight one of the like mini sub villains, and man, I had to rage quit.
It's funny, I feel like everyone, with a lot of these kind of games, you get one boss. There's always, and everyone seems to have a different boss like that. That just, it's just up against the wall. And you even read, you know, the wisdom of other people that easily defeat it. And you're like, no, I'm not going to go, you know, churn my levels for 2 hours till I'm strong
enough.
And no, I don't want to use that really cheesy technique just to get through this either. There should be a way for me to win this battle without breaking the game.
Yeah. I don't think it's bad. I remember like the thing that really got me, like there's one fight in like Final Fantasy Tactics, which I had to suffer through as a kid. There's one freaking fight with Wygraph where if you haven't spec'd your build properly, the game is done. Like, you got nowhere to move forward. So, anyway, thanks for that about FF7 Remake. Intergrade, I'm looking forward to playing with it. Let's move on to some other news. Maybe a quick PSA about Amazon Sidewalk. Do you guys want to talk about this a little? Anybody want to introduce it?
Yeah. So Amazon Sidewalk, I think you might have seen the news this week. I was pretty mad about it. Amazon Sidewalk is this new service by the company that will share your Wi-Fi mm-hmm. network with all basically people in your area.
Yeah, with other with Amazon devices. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So it's they're looking to spread it not just to spread it beyond Amazon devices. But for now, it's going to be Echo and Ring products that are going to automatically be used as bridges to extend the range of your Wi-Fi network. And according to Amazon, it's protected with multiple layers of encryption. But like the fact that it's an automatically opt-in feature is what pisses me off the most about mm-hmm. this. Because it's launched already, if I'm not wrong, this week. And yes, you can opt out of Sidewalk, but
it's pretty easy. It's just a couple steps in your Amazon app.
Well, I've been looking for the option in my Alexa app, and I still haven't found the option.
Do you have an Echo device?
I have an Echo, but thankfully mm-hmm. it looks like a second gen, and so this is happening to Echo's third gen and newer. So
if you
don't have a compatible device,
yeah, you probably won't see the thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So mine's probably not going to be in Sidewalk, which is nice. And mm-hmm. I think that's all on the Amazon devices that I have that are Echo or Ring. Mm-hmm. But for anyone, like for example, for me, if my Echo was a third gen, I'd be pissed. But just go opt out.
Why? I just want to know why. So why do you want to opt out? Why do you not want this?
Right.
I don't want to be sharing my Wi-Fi network with people because it, again, despite Amazon saying there's multiple layers of encryption, it presents another potential vulnerability for someone to exploit if they need it.
Even if it's a sliver of bandwidth, I'm also thinking like, who gives you the right to do this?
Yeah,
it's like,
I'm paying for my internet.
Get me wrong. I'm very much, the idea of me automatically opt in is atrocious. I just
that,
wondered,
like to me, I feel like that's the big thing. But yeah, go ahead.
No, I just wonder what that was. Because I think I'm on a different internet provider now, but in the UK mm-hmm. I think Virgin, which does internet service here as well, they do a similar sharing of a collective login to a web browser, but you do have to log in with your ID and stuff, so it's very much mm-hmm. traceable to who
and they
you are.
They do that here in the US too. Ben points out that Optimum routers do that. AT&T was mm-hmm. actually one of the first companies to do that with their thing. And we've written about that. If you go look back at like Engadget coverage from like 2013, 2014, we talked about it. Yeah, other companies have done this, and certainly in a way that's probably a little more even bandwidth intensive. You were renting these routers from these companies. In many cases, you cannot buy a replacement. Like I have AT&T gigabit service right now. They don't have the things you can buy on Amazon like they do for cable modems, you know? So a lot of times you're trapped with these devices, and yeah, you can opt out, but it does kind of suck that these companies can basically turn you into a bandwidth sharer if you don't want and open up security
issues. I think that's,
yeah.
That's the difference too, right? Like when with Amazon, with like an Optimum or something, you know you're getting into some sort of internet service and you more or less have a little bit more expectations as to like Wi-Fi routers on their own just
broadcast. Yeah, it's kind of connected to the service.
Right. But when you buy an Echo speaker, you're not thinking it will turn into a range extender.
This is literally a Trojan horse. Yeah.
This pisses me the F off. I'm sorry. When I saw this, I think it was over the weekend. I got so mad. I think my blood pressure went up.
We knew. And we knew this feature was coming for years too. But I think like now that it has been, like we know the full extent of it, it is infuriating. This is the worst of what Amazon has done so far. Yeah.
It's just so incredibly arrogant. It's just incredibly arrogant.
It is. It's assumption. But anyway, mm-hmm. according to, just to give you guys a bit more detail on the actual amount of data, it's taking out about a small chunk of your internet bandwidth, mm-hmm. according to them. 80 kilobits per second per bridge and up to 500 megabytes of monthly data in total to share with your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And it uses Bluetooth and other frequencies to expand coverage area. Currently just in the U.S., mm-hmm. but just kind of wild.
I think functionally it is a good idea to have that sort of like sharing as a backup, basically. So if your neighbor's internet goes down, they have like home security or something, like just a little bit of data. That's fine, but make it make it opt in, make it something I have to choose to do. Because then at least like you have some sort of control as a consumer. Yeah,
exactly. And Devinder brings up a good point, which is the reasoning behind Sidewalk in the first place is that like all your devices, your smart home devices that were connected to to the internet to work need a backup point in case like as a failsafe, right? And instead of having like a, I don't know, a generator run your power nonstop, or like, you know, if internet goes out only in your apartment and not next door, then you still have a way to turn off your lights or something, right? But idea is nice in theory. The way they've executed this opt-in, like Devinder said, is just not cool.
Not cool. And
anyway,
they do, companies do this because they can't, because nobody has been pushing back, and they haven't been, hey, look, AT&T has done it, Optimum has done it, what's the problem with me doing it? This is the kind of case where it's like, oh, we need better consumer protection.
I've never seen Cher so mad about something.
Ridiculous.
Oh, it's just, I haven't gotten mad in front of you lately, but this did piss me off.
Your rage, if you guys go look at the live stream, if you're listening to the audio podcast, Sherlyn's rage definitely shook the screen.
She also just slammed her phone down at the end of the segment.
And by accident.
I'm still cute.
Let's talk about something you like, Sherlyn. Yes. Let's talk about Android.
Yeah, and actually, well, there was still some other stuff that happened this week, and I want to do kind of a quick run through of all the other news that we went through, right? So, okay, and this week was all about WWDC, except for Android 12's public beta 2 is out. Google released it yesterday.
Just as important.
Can we cut Cher's mic? Can we cut it?
This update brings with it the privacy dashboard that was announced at Google I/O, as well as the camera and mic toggles and indicators that I was looking forward to. So I can't wait to try that out, and you can too if you're already enrolled in the beta or if you're willing to give unstable software a go. Another piece of news this week: President Biden has revoked the Trump orders that were aimed at TikTok and WeChat. This nonstop back and forth for these companies is continuing.
Oh my God. I wish there was a press conference where he just like took the text of that order and like flushed it down the toilet. Like that's just really, that's all we need. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But it does say, it's not like, hey, you're free to operate however you want. Of course, Biden has a new order signed that's requiring security reviews of some of these apps like TikTok and WeChat and a few others.
As they should.
And but it sets out some guidelines for so-called evidence-based analysis of these apps, which is
which good. Means you can't lodge a international like you fit when somebody is mean to you on TikTok. How about that?
Right.
Like,
or yeah. Because they TikTok users, you know, en masse signed up for rallies and then didn't turn up.
Love
and
it.
Then you're like, meh. Well, something else happened this week. We had a very popular gadget from 2019 get an updated version released this year. Sony has unveiled the WF-1000XM4.
They are so bad at model names, man. But
the names are awful. But we have a full review up by our resident audio guru, Billy Steele, and he liked it. Short story.
Likes it.
But he does warn that they are very, very much more expensive, $280. But he does warn that there is one change on the M4 that might cause some issues for you. I'm not going to spoil what those were, but it does sound like overall.
Why not? It could be. Because
it could be. I don't really know.
It's the earbud. It's the earbud tips. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
He said that the new ear tips can be awkward in his car.
Sony used to like, they've done such a great job with the last set, but they were so big and so weirdly designed that they never felt comfortable. Personally, like I usually have AirPods Pro on just because they're lighter and they sound good enough. Like they're good enough for what
I
need.
Noise cancellation is also good enough. But yeah, the Sony, I also had the Model 3s, the predecessor to these ones. And they're they sound very good. The noise cancellation is probably the best I've had on wireless buds. I'm excited to, I want to test these ones out. Sony UK said they haven't got them in stock here. So that's an outrage. But yeah, I'm looking forward to testing them at some point.
So Sony's also probably, I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about will Sony ever reclaim its former glory? And Sony's probably mad at us.
I've definitely written that that same story.
You wrote that in 2014.
Yeah, I've been at Engadget. I've been at Engadget approximately 10 years, so I've definitely written that story at least twice.
Definitely. It is funny though to get a call from Sony PR the morning after that story goes up, and they're like, "What's up? What's going on here?
Are you
be
okay?
better? Be better, too. Sony." Yeah.
Well, we also have some listener mail we wanted to get to, and this was from a while ago, and we're sorry it took us so long to get to
it. Busy time.
But it's a heavy news month. But regular listener Mark Dell sent in a question that those of you who are in the podcast can listen to right now. This is Mark Dell's question.
Hi there, Dravindra and Sherlyn. This is Mark Dell, and I was wondering if you buy any movies digitally, or if you stick to things like Netflix and Hulu. I was looking to find a store that would be very cross-platform and maybe has a good few deals every now and then. High quality, you know, all the good stuff. Love the show. Thank you.
So Devendra, this feels like a squarely you question, sure. Even though I also have some thoughts, but what do you think?
It really depends on the ecosystems you're in. I feel like that's it. The best like platform free option is Vudu, just because they have great quality. They've been around forever. They have a good selection of things. But I think the best one that is kind of like more locked into a platform is iTunes, just because Apple gets a lot of exclusives and they're the only ones that get really good special features with some movies. So if you care about movie commentaries, if you care about, you know, some of the behind the scenes stuff you used to get on DVDs and Blu-rays, you really can only get that on iTunes. So there's that. It used to be you were mainly locked in to the Apple TV if you were buying stuff on iTunes, but Apple has since opened up. There's an Apple TV app on TVs now. It's on game consoles. It's on Roku devices. So you don't really lose anything anymore by buying on iTunes. I actually need to double check the special feature stuff and make sure all that works. But it should, I haven't seen the major issue with that. I also really appreciate the fact that when we reviewed the Apple TV 4K several years ago, was that 2017? Apple was the first company to give reasonable pricing for 4K movies. So their 4K movies were the same price as like the old HD ones. So it was like $15 to $20. At that time, Vudu was selling 4K for $30. $30 plus. And then Apple also started automatically upgrading HD movies to 4K for free.
I remember that. Yeah.
Which is also super great. Vudu didn't really do that. They did that with like, I think some franchises, I think like the Batman movies or something, they've done that a little bit, but across the board, that's something Apple has done. And when the Disney movies were available in 4K, all of a sudden, anybody who bought all the Disney stuff, you had a 4K Dolby Vision version, you know, of that movie for no extra cost. So I do appreciate all that. And if you use iTunes, all that stuff does connect to what's the movies or Movies Anywhere. So you can also use the Movies Anywhere app to look at things on other services too. So iTunes for me is the big one because I have an Apple TV and everything.
I mean, Dev does bring up a very good point, which is that my answer was going to be I am a Google ecosystem person, so I buy all my stuff on Play Movies and TV and, you know, YouTube whenever, you know, that. But I like that things that I buy across the YouTube, Google ecosystem show up in the one place. Like for me, it's important that they're all in one place. And then they then appear on all the other devices that are connected to that one account. So my Chromecast has it, my Google TV has it, my phones have it. I can play it wherever. So that's what's important for me. But the Vindra's point about the special features and the, you know, behind the scenes stuff.
And video quality too. I don't know if Google Play does like 4K Dolby Vision and all the fun stuff.
Not Dolby Vision, I don't think, but I don't also always watch in 4K. But yeah, if that's important to you too, that's a thing to look out for. I will say the behind the scenes stuff is not something I considered until Disney Plus like made it clear to me that there's still so much bonus content that like I'm missing out on. So that's something that you like to get and you don't want to like just have to like dig through YouTube for blooper reels and that sort of stuff. It sounds like iTunes might be a good one.
I love commentary tracks. And also if you have an iPhone and you're watching a movie with special features, you could just start playing the commentary track there, you know, and listen to it like a podcast. So all that stuff is good.
So, Mark, we hope that answered your question. Please let us know.
And
if anyone else listening has other questions like this question or any other tech-related or world life-related question, please send them our way to podcast@engadget.com. And if you want to hear your voice on the podcast too, send us a voice note, send us a little voice recording of you telling us your question, if that's easy or convenient.
It's always nice to get more voices on the show. Thanks. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I just want to quickly shout out, hey, too many reviews. Too many damn reviews. I have my review of the NVIDIA RTX 3070 Ti going up. It went up this week. I was not as impressed as I was with the 3080 Ti. Okay. So yeah, go check that out. Kind of a disappointment, but also you can't buy these things for the retail price anywhere. So good luck with any of that. My main conclusion with this review is if you find the 3070 or the 3070 Ti or the 3080 on sale anywhere, that is basically a $200 price range. You know, just get it. Get it, because you won't find it again. So get whatever one you can afford. I think that's the big takeaway there. I'm working on some Father's Day gift guide stuff, and the Toyota Sienna Hybrid that I talked about a couple months ago, I'll be writing that up for Father's Day stuff as well, and maybe I'll be doing more family car stuff too, because I find that really fun and interesting, and also my daughter loves going into new cars. Like, she's a budding tech head. Like, every time we go in a new car, she's like, whoa. We were in the Model Y. I did a test drive in the Tesla Model Y. She looked at the ceiling, was like, "That, look at that. Like, this whole ceiling is glass, you know? Like, she notices things, look." So I do appreciate that. Sherlyn, what's up with you?
So I'm still reviewing a laptop, and I've been doing WWDC briefings all week, and then I got more secret stuff coming up that I can't tell people about. I do want to shout out really quickly our video producer, live stream operator, Julio Barrientos, has been working on some very important stuff. Julio, not sure if you can shout out what you are working on yourself. Julio has been working on some Engadget memes, and you can check them out if you tune into our live stream Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern thereabouts. They're pretty fun, and you can see them on Twitter
too. That's the only way you'll see the horrific Twitter, what is it? Chris Velasco's Garfield. Velasqueville.
Oh God, yeah. The Velasqueville. No, that was I think Mark Dell.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. That was too. Mark Dell. But you can only see the stuff on the live stream. And Julio's our great meme king with the dogs and the
meme
pets.
Lord. Yeah, meme lord. We've got Matt. What are you working on?
I'm also mostly working on memes.
You just want to be a TikTok influencer now.
I don't think 36 is too old. For me, work-wise, yes, this is the week of E3, a little bit of WWDC at the start of the week. As you can probably tell by my eyes, I'm already very tired. So yeah, I've got a few cool pieces in the works for E3. Once I get time to play the Final Fantasy VII Remake Intermission, I'll probably write that up. And that should be fun. I think I coined it to my editor-in-chief of, this is... Given that we weren't going to meet the embargo, this is probably low priority, high interest. So it'll get done, but it's just not the most important thing to get done. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a shout out to my newsletter co-worker who won't be here much longer either. Aww. So, Richard Lawler. I'll be talking about him a bit later in the morning after newsletter at the weekend. But yeah, so I'm going to be even more busy starting next week with the newsletter stuff. That's exciting too.
Yay.
We're going to miss Richard. We're
going to miss Arla, as we call him. You will find him on the internet, and he is now one of our, he's now a competitor. I must destroy him. So, yeah. You'll see what's up soon, folks. Let's move on to our pop culture picks. Sherlyn, what is, what's your secret pop culture pick
this week? I got three things. Number one, of course, let's start off with freaking Loki. Sherlyn Loki. I'm going to, Loki. I saw this episode. Yeah. Sherlyn Loki. I'm Loki. Get it? Anyway, last night, yesterday, Wednesday, Disney Plus, you know, made the debut episode of this series available. So I watched it last night, and it's freaking awesome. I mean, it's clear this is what's leading up to Doctor Strange's Multiverse of Madness. Sure. But I don't know if either of you have watched the new episode.
I did. Dev or Matt. It's really good.
I loved it.
I haven't quite finished the episode, but it's got to the ground. I don't want to. The final kind of, this is who you're going to be, you know, working for us for. I've just heard that name. So I need to. So okay, I really okay, need to okay. see the final 20 minutes. Yeah. But yeah, it looks really yeah. polished. It looks so seamless with so the movies, good. Which I really yeah. like. And I think WandaVision kind of did that later on, in that it still felt yeah. movie-esque, but this does it without any of the kind of dressing of, you know,
yeah.
Sitcom yeah. tribute and the rest of it. So yeah, I really like it. Shout out. So far.
I got like Good Place vibes a lot of the time. There's a lot of that, episode. Yeah. It's the concept. Yeah, there's a lot of that. And an actual actor from The Good Place, Pillboy was
yeah,
there.
Pillboy, yeah.
Yes,
there
was a yes, whole... yes.
playing basically the same character.
Yeah.
There was a moment, one of the lines of dialogue is someone asks him, what is his name? And I straight up shouted, Pillboy! And then no one was there to enjoy
and
the moment.
Nobody was there in your apartment
I...
to enjoy
yeah,
that.
This is why I need share play with Matt. But anyway...
Can I opt no. out like the Amazon speaker? Can I opt out of
no
you can
cannot.
Just put her
this
on
is an
mute
opt-in feature.
You know, just do the
this
chat
is a default. But anyway, Loki, fun ride, looking shaping up to be a very good season. The first episode was 51 minutes long, including all the credits and stuff.
It's good. Let me just say Captain the Falcon the Winter Soldier was real bad. Like it I think it started strong and got dumb real quick.
Yeah.
And WandaVision yeah, kind of petered out towards the end. Like I really liked a lot of what WandaVision was doing, but some of it was hit or miss. I didn't care about some of the early sitcom stuff. But this one just feels like it's really well written. I love the design of it. It is very like Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
It is very like Brazil meets MCU meets like Time Crimes and Time Cops.
Gorgeous.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. The set, the concept of the show is amazing. I adore it. And it takes off right after Endgame, I believe. If you're a Marvel fan, you're gonna love it. Even as a standalone show, I think you're gonna love it. Anyway, I have two more picks, so let's get to it.
Yep.
One, the other pick was more of a debate topic, really. I've been looking forward to the latest Conjuring movie for a
you're
very,
you're on video,
very long
Matt.
Time.
You're like.
We can see you can rolling see your
mean,
head extreme.
Just for the record, for everyone that's watching this stream, Sherlyn has already taken my pop culture pick and said
it's
it
true.
As her first thing
oh,
of three. So she's already taken the single thing that I was going to say and then
I'm
kind
sorry.
Of ruined it with okay. a really lazy take on it.
Why don't we say that this is yours? Why don't we say that this is yours? This is your pick. Go
sure,
ahead.
Sure, sure.
Definitely
talk
do
about
not
it.
Want The Conjuring. No, thank you.
Okay. Well, anyway. Because I took Loki. Anyway, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It is the latest in The Conjuring series of movies starring Patrick Wilson, Vera Farmiga. Farmiga. I like it because I just love the Conjuring movies that star the pair of them. And I think they're very strong characters for this series.
Sure.
I mean, the people they're actually based on a little bit different. But Ed and Lorraine Warren, these supernatural...
Paranormal investigators.
I was looking for the right word for it. And they encounter another case. It's fun. James Wan is not the director, but he is one of the producers and the... believe the creators of this one.
He made the franchise just like the Saw franchise.
He made the whole franchise.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot just because of that, right? I like the universe. I've already liked the established characters. So for me, this was a great ride. But Devendra, I hear you did not like this.
This movie's bad. This movie is real bad. And I think like if you're a real Conjuring fan and not a fake Conjuring fan. You could see a distinct,
out
like there's a
blood.
Precipitous drop in quality from the first Conjuring, which is a masterpiece. I think you should see it, Matt. Like just in terms of like modern horror movies, he basically
really
reinvented the haunted house movie. And there are some sequences in that are still like unmatched in horror films today. The Conjuring 2 actually moves to London. So it goes to like...
Yep. Conjuring 2 is pretty good.
Yeah, Conjuring 2 is all right. I feel like it was a step down. This one feels like the franchise fell off a cliff because it's really badly written. I don't care about this case. This case is it's an actual murder where somebody said that they were possessed by the devil, which makes it feel grosser than a haunted house movie, right? Where it's, fun haunted house. But this was a real murder involving real people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That was what I thought was interesting about it, though, was that like the way they set this up was that it's not really just a horror movie. It's actually a mystery movie, sort of, more than anything else.
I just discovered it's on Netflix, the first one.
Yes, it's on Netflix. Go check it out. Go check it out. Watch it at night with the lights off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely more of a mystery movie than it is rooted in horror, even though there are elements of supernatural. But, when I was watching some of the, again, exclusive content behind the scenes and stuff like that, James Wan himself said he wanted to kind of do something different with this and make it more of a mystery setup, right? You're not just, it's almost a procedural at some point.
It is kind of like a courtroom movie where they forgot to do the courtroom scenes. I know why, I know why you like this movie, Shalyn. And I can say it in two words. John Noble, Mr. John Noble from Fringe, appears in this. And I love John Noble.
He's amazing.
He's great. But when John Noble,
he showed up and I screamed again. John Noble was like the,
you probably would actually know his voice too, Matt, but he was like the mad scientist guy in Fringe. And he has a great, great voice. So when John Noble appears, you're also like, I can't trust this guy. You know, like, anyway, this movie is bad, but I'm glad you liked it, Shirley. If you want to hear,
so good in it too.
If you want to hear further thoughts, I reviewed it on the Slash Film Cast. That was our big review. We also go into like, what is up with Ed and Lorraine Warren? Because I grew up reading their stuff. Yeah. Like, these are the folks that made the Amityville Horror like a thing in pop culture. Yes. Like, they're big pop culture personalities. They are quite literally charlatans in many ways. And Ed Warren is not a great guy. Like, there was news about him. Like, just doing really gross things, like not being a good dude. So, they're not really a thing I follow anymore. I did see Lorraine Warren. She did a lecture while I was in college. So in like 2004, they brought her in for like one of those Halloween things. And that is how they made money. They made money with the lecture circuit and their books. So she's really compelling. She's a good storyteller. But yeah, their background's not so great. The best thing about these movies is that relationship. So,
it's the fictional relationship within the universe. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like I'm going to save my third one for the next episode then, in this case. Because I feel like we've got a lot.
Sure,
so,
we've got so much.
Matt or Dev, what do you guys
go,
want
Matt,
to
go,
about?
Matt.
I've got nothing now, haven't I?
You got nothing. You're low-key.
You were going to say what, though?
Shirlin didn't look. Yeah, Shirlin didn't look at the notes. Didn't prepare at all.
Excuse me.
I don't see any notes here, Matt.
Business as usual on the podcast.
Thank you. Like Dev said, there is no notes.
The notes are actually empty.
So we agree with you on Loki, right?
Loki's
Did you
good.
Have any thoughts to add about Loki?
No, like I said, you ruined it with your terrible take.
Well, I do appreciate Matt. You are, if you guys go look at the video stream, Matt is slowly doing his Nordic Viking cosplay. So you want to be in a Loki thing at some point.
I hate how much I'm stroking it when I see myself
you
on
really
camera.
Are.
Like, it makes me look nefarious. It never quite, I think it's a bit lopsided. So,
I think it's looking good. But somebody, a real meme lord out there, should superimpose Matt's head on the Techno Viking video, which I really feel Techno Viking vibes going on here. Let me just shout out a couple things. I've been watching the show on Peacock, which is, I hate saying Peacock. It is the one streaming service that just has never quite won me over. Then I saw this show called We Are Lady Parts, which I really love. It is fantastic. It is a show about a Muslim all-girl punk band in London where, it's just a punk band. It's just girls trying to, like, do cool things and make some music. It's created by Anita Manzoor. The whole premise is that, you know, there's this three-piece punk band. They're looking for a lead guitarist, and that is the main thrust of it. It is very much like Fleabag meets Edgar Wright's Scott Pilgrim, because there's a lot of music in there, but it's also about like relationships and modern life, and also life about Muslim women, which we don't normally get to see in any sort of TV. So I really appreciate that, and it's really well written. Love all the characters. It's really funny. The music is good. I like the show enough that I have subscribed to the Peacock just because of finish it. So there's this. There's also Girls 5 Eva, which I talked about last week, which is pretty good. This is better. And also the Saved by the Bell remake, which weirdly is a great, great remake. I'll be checking those out and then canceling Peacock. But this show is worth watching. Yeah.
That was my plan for Disney Plus, but then I accidentally bought a year. Accidentally, it seemed cheaper.
Accidentally, that's what they do to you. Yeah. Also, want to shout out the latest episode of Mythic Quest, season 2, episode 6, which so is good. We've been loving Mythic Quest. Trill and I have talked about it. This episode is a lot like the mid-season episode last year, where it is just like a complete standalone thing that takes you out of the like workplace universe of Mythic Quest and tells you some backstory about one of the characters. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, you're talking about the episode named Backstory,
the episode actually named Backstory. It is really well done. It's set in LA in the 70s, and it's all about science fiction and the world of like trying to get into being a science fiction author and things like that. Fantastic episode, and tells us a lot about this main character too. So hey, watch Mythic Quest. I think it's one of the best things on TV right now that's on Apple TV Plus.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elm. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at the /filmcast, reviewing movies and telling you why The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It is bad.
If you need Matt Smith, he is online
at that Matt Smith. That's Matt with one T, and everywhere else where you find your internet.
If you want to send me all kinds of random cameos that John Noble has made over his lifetime and career.
Man. Legends of Tomorrow. He made a great one.
Cool.
Yeah.
Send me all of those. I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts, feedback, and questions at podcastandengadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
Spotted Dick.